up the current in there to hold four AAA batteries. Another gadget I had, a light, Nick, that I took apart. It stopped working. It was a light that you plug in the wall, and it's supposed to keep the batteries charged. Until you need it, you pull it out of the wall, and you turn the switch on, and then the light comes on. But while it's plugged in the wall, you can't turn the light on while it's plugged in the wall. It's got a built-in AC plug. It's a little, also a small thing, only about, it's about 2.5 inches long and about an inch wide. It's sealed up. It has on the back of it an AC plug that sort of recesses. Now, they charge the batteries. They have two AA size NiCad batteries in it. And Dick, you wouldn't believe how they charge them, over.
That's a new way. I'm going to guess that the 110 volt line goes through a simple series capacitor into a diode into the double A's as a constant current generator. Am I close?
Got it. Two of them. They got two of these little circuits in there. Two diodes and a capacitor. And they got two of these circuits in there. And when you put the switch to off, it separates the two batteries, the switch. Puts this little constant current circuit into it. I can say it's got a 0.2 capacitor and two diodes. The two diodes are wired. Let's see. How did I, get the two diodes are wired in series. Where the two diodes come together, positive and negative over there, that's where the capacitor, the 0.47 capacitor, then is hooked there, goes to one side of the line. Then the other side of the line goes to the one of the diodes and the negative, the anode of the diode and a negative of the battery. The positive side of the battery goes to the other diode that's in series with it. They got two of these. So when you put the switch to off position and you plug it in the wall, the batteries are being charged individually. When you put the switch to on position, the batteries are paralleled up for light. I said, this is the damnedest thing. What an idea. Gee, you can make yourself, you can make yourself a small charge if you're going to, need it. Maybe a charge. I wonder if this could work on some way, a multi-cells or some way, so that when you go somewhere and you want to take along, a radio or something, rather than drag a heavy charger or a wall wart or something, you think this would work, this circuit, on multi-battery systems or something else, Dick, over?
I just did a quick calculation. Assuming your diodes are set up for half wave, the capacitive reactance of 0.47 picofarads, 0.47 microfarads at 60 cycles is 5,644 ohms on a 115 volt line. If it was full wave rectification, that would give you 20 milliamps of current. If it's half wave is going to give you 10. So it's 10 or 20 milliamps of, what's the word I'm looking for now? 10 or 20 milliamps of constant current into the cells being charged. So for certain size NiCad batteries, that's about right. And with that kind of a circuit, I see no reason why, instead of charging one or two cells in series, I bet you it could charge about 10 or 15, because the 115 volts is still substantial compared to the DC voltage of the cells. Therefore, the total current would be almost the same. And as you put a whole lot of cells in series, all you'd really have to do is just raise the 0.47 microfarads, lower the capacitive reactance. Very simple circuit. The only slight spookiness of that circuit is that if the instant of contact happens to be the instant that the 110 volt line is at positive peak where the diode is conducting, then that first spike of current is going to be pretty fierce. But I guess they could put a 1-ohm series resistor to protect from that situation. Back to you, Mel.
I can say I've never seen anything like this. It sounds like a lot of items that should be able to put a little built-in charger based on this principle, and so that you don't have to have an external charger. Maybe just a simple wire just to plug into the wall that can, slip into a little receptacle on the side of the unit, and that would be it. I just thought of, I broke it open, and I could say the bulb went bad, and sealed up, it's a one-shot deal. So I was just curious. I said, they can't have a transformer in this thing or whatever. How the heck are they charging them? So this is basically what they're doing. Very clever. Really took me by surprise. Other than that, let me see emails. The only other email I got here, question, somebody, I don't know if we want to bother discussing it late already, so maybe we can put this off. They wanted to make the discussion, they get a little, into time-consuming, about wave angle. How do you compute the wave angle of your antenna if you, for a certain frequency and your antenna is a certain height? If they said they've seen published, ideal takeoff angles, minimum, lowest, and highest takeoff angle for that frequency. So how do they determine the nitty-gritties of this? Or how can I determine on my antenna, they want to know, what is its takeoff angle if the frequency is known and the height is known? So that's one of the questions I was going to actually discuss, but maybe we ought to leave it for another night, because it's 11 o'clock already, Dick, and I know a lot of people would probably want to get out of here. They have to go to work tomorrow. Oh, wait, tomorrow's a day off anyhow for most, I think. K2RIW in the tech, that's K2KEY.
And two moon bounds recognized. Not, and your audio is quite low, Barry. You're going to have to eat that microphone for us to hear you. Not everybody's got a day off tomorrow. Martin Luther King Day, I think it is. Also, when it comes to that series capacitor charging network, the good news is very few components are there, and it's quite effective. The bad news is it's hot. In other words, if you didn't use a polarized plug, your batteries might be 115 volts above ground, and if you can come in contact with the batteries while they're being charged, it's a potential shock hazard. Whereas that flashlight you're talking about is nice plastic, it's a plastic encased thing where you can't get your little fingers on the actual circuit while it's being charged. N2MB, give us some audio, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Okay, I have no way of adjusting it at the moment. But anyway, good evening, everybody. I've listened to you all night. I've been traveling, so I didn't really want to get into the conversation. But the discussion earlier tonight with the loop antennas is really getting good. I'm almost ready to the point where I think I might make one of these things. You guys are really getting me going on this one. I don't remember who was in here earlier tonight, but he was talking about all kinds of loops and calculations. I was in my car. I couldn't write anything down. That was nice. Anyway, I just wanted to quickly comment. Mel, I got the LED light that you might like. This is one. We all have several. I use them in work. I think I've got 7 or 8 by now. All different varieties. But one of them in particular caught my fancy. I needed a desk lamp here in the shack. And I saw this thing on eBay. And the guy actually delivered it in person because he's in the area. Drove over with his car and dropped it off. Cheap, too. Like 20-something bucks, I think, or 18 bucks. And it's 100, and I didn't count them. I think it's like 112 or 114 LEDs. It works on 110 volts. There is no power supply in there. Might be a diode. I don't know. But it's the coolest desk lamp I ever saw.
That sounds like a fun thing. He found it on eBay, and he's selling just one of them, or he's selling a zillion of them for $20-some-odd dollars. Barry, go ahead.
Well, I don't know how many he sells. I understand his business is doing pretty good. I did ask him that. When he drove up to the house, I asked him how his business. The name of his company is I think it's called Anything LED, or something like that. LED, I think it's Anything LED, actually. I got some paperwork around here somewhere. But he sells many different types of Anything LED is what this guy sells. So he sells flashlights. He sells the desk lamps, he sells little battery-operated desk lamps, but this one I like because it's not battery-operated, it's just got, it's 110 volts, and just plugs in. It's so nice. It doesn't get warm. You can leave it on all night. It doesn't consume very much power, but it's quite bright. I mean, it lights up the whole desk because it's like 114 little LEDs, you know, white LEDs. That's pretty nice.
Now, those super efficient white LEDs are a little bit bluish. Therefore, the light coming out of there is a little bit harsh. Does it look like that, or have they done something to warm it up a little bit, Barry?
Yes, it is a little on the blue side. You know, there are two types of white LEDs. One type, which I suspect this is not really a white LED. It's really a ultraviolet or infrared, probably an infrared LED, that's looking at a phosphor, which glows white when hit with the light. That's probably what these are. The other type, as you might know, is actually three LEDs, or maybe more, in little bundles. You know, each LED is a package of three that's set up to make white light, you know, that approach. I guess that's the more expensive approach. I don't know if it's more efficient, but the type that this is, which it makes the phosphor glow, I think is the most common.
Yeah, the one that makes white light by three LEDs, a red, green, and a blue, the red is easy, the green is difficult, and the blue is difficult. I own a green pointer, and it makes green light by starting off at an infrared frequency, and it goes into a crystal that is a frequency doubler crystal. Great little thing, because directly making a light-emitting diode in green, I think, is very, very difficult. Let's see, there was something else that Mel just said I was going to make comment on. Okay, I'm going to give you a couple of words on the subject of takeoff angle. A takeoff angle really is a vertically stacked phase array. If it's a horizontally polarized antenna, like a horizontally polarized dipole, you've got the real signal coming off the dipole, and the mirror image of that signal below the ground. If your dipole is 20 feet above ground, there's also a mirror image of it 20 feet below ground. That's the good news. In the case of horizontal polarization, the ground gives you a phase reversal. The ground reflection gives you a phase reversal. So it is a kind of a phased array where the dipole above ground and the mirror image of the dipole below ground are running 180 degrees out of phase. A smart person with a little bit of mathematics will be able to take that and calculate a takeoff angle. There is a formula in the ARRL antenna book that tells you how to do exactly that. By the way, that formula you gave us last week, let me backtrack. Barry wanted to know this great guy that was giving us information tonight on... what was the subject we were discussing? Anyhow, what was that?
Loop antennas.
Loop antennas. That was Kilo Delta 2 Bravo Delta. Kilo Delta 2 Bravo Delta, John. And he was giving all this great loop information. And the equation he gave us is that the voltage that you get out of the loop antenna equals 2 pi echo November over lambda. 2 pi echo November over lambda, where echo is the microvolts per meter of the field strength. November is the number of turns. And one other thing I noticed, changing subjects now, Mel, the formula you gave us last week, for calculating standing wave ratio, beta equals open parentheses j squared plus 1 over r, close parentheses plus r, that's the definition of beta, and then beta plus square root of beta squared minus 4, all over 2, gives you the standing wave ratio. The beta plus square root of beta squared minus 4 over 2, if you study that, it looks identical to the quadratic equation, except it's missing the A's. The quadratic equals b squared plus or minus the square root of b squared minus 4ac over 2a. Almost the identical form. So your standing wave ratio equation, the one that you use, Mel, which I have never seen before, it's a rare one. That must be taught at Brooklyn Technical High School, because it wasn't taught in the college I went to. They went to something with more complex mathematics. Not as easy to write down, so to speak. You get rid of the complex mathematics right away by squaring it in your calculation of beta. But do you happen to remember when you first saw that method of calculating standing wave ratio? K2KEY.
Yeah, this is K2KEY. For the life of me, I don't know where I saw that. And it stood in my head for so many years. I don't remember if it was Brooklyn Tech. Yeah, it's basically a quadratic equation, like it said. Somewhat of a twisted quadratic equation, but so simple. I don't know who came up with this. I don't know, maybe I came up with this fooling around. It's possible. I don't really remember. But, you know, I remember that, how to go from rectangular to polar. You know, these are just general things that we've used in antenna types of, you know, theory work and everything, like visualizing and all that kind of jazz. The other thing is you start talking about, you know, wavelengths. I was going to give the formula basically how you can, you know, determine what the wavelength angle of your antenna is at that frequency, you know, approximately. And, but I think we better leave that for next week because we'll get into a lot of, you know, nitty-gritty now. It's getting late. Barry, I was going to ask Barry. We were on the air with Barry the other day, and he started talking about his four square, so I thought maybe he'd put some words in tonight about that. Go ahead.
Yeah, Barry, have you made me... give us a progress report on your four square antenna, Barry.
Okay, well, right now I'm waiting for more parts to come in. I need some balance. I just got some more wire, so, and the insulators came on Friday to continue the project, but I don't have the balance. They should come during the week. They're back ordered, my luck. So when I get the other balance, the next thing I'm going to do is head over to a place called Hadco Aluminum. And I got to come up with an ingenious way of getting this thing stuck out there in the western direction, 45 feet out from the tower. I told you my plan, original plan, I think I'm still going to stick with it, is to make it look like the outrigger on a mast. I think that'll work. 45 feet isn't really a terrible amount of distance to get an aluminum pipe. I have to get the right sleeve sizes. I want it to be, you know, kind of skinny when it gets all the way out there. So that's what I'm holding now. Just waiting for the extra parts to come in, and I'll start phase two.
Well done. We'll be hearing about that more later on. There was two interesting articles in the last 2 weeks on one of my hobby horses, and that is the amount of antennas that are in various communities for supporting first responders. To repeat, there was a beautiful Newsday article, January 4th, Thursday issue, on the front cover. January 4th, Newsday, article entitled Towers of Trouble, the Fight Over Emergency Radios. Some Nassau Localities Block Anti-Terror Plan. That's the name of the article. Okay, Friday of this week, another Newsday article, January 12th issue, on page Alpha 40, article entitled Nassau Group to Attune Antenna Bids. And it talks about the fact that the town of Freeport has accepted the Homeland Security money to install more antennas. Bayville is still in a holding pattern because they're holding public hearings on the issue. And so various communities are misunderstanding whether or not RF energy is dangerous. I'm almost absolutely positive they're dead wrong. And I mean that in a double entendre. Dead wrong meaning that their attitude will cause people to die. because they're refusing to allow these emergency antennas to be installed in their town. I'm positive the emergency antennas are as safe as all heck, because RF energy of a radio kind only creates heating, and the heating we're talking about is minuscule by comparison to solar exposure. So if these people who mean well and they think they're protecting their children and they don't want any antennas within a zillion miles of their schools, and as such communities are denying the sighting of cell phone towers, they're denying the sighting of fire, police, ambulance, any of these emergency service antennas, they're not allowing them to be installed in their town, and that decision is lethal. It will create a calculatable number of deaths in those communities. That makes it foolish. Many of these communities have intelligent people who are capable of researching this further. They don't have to start off with an emotional response that represents pure xenophobia. They have the capability, they have the resources to investigate the situation and stop being afraid of it. For 20 years or 30 years, we've been...
Repeater, timeout, cancel.
For 20 or 30 years, we have been heating our food with microwave energy and microwave ovens. It's okay to heat our food when you have a tremendous amount of RF energy, but one millionth of that amount of energy coming out of an antenna, one one-thousandth the amount of energy that your son gets when he stands in the sun, that's unacceptable. Of course, it's foolish once you understand the mathematics and the physics involved. Don't have to take my word for it. Research it. We amateur radio operators have the knowledge and tremendous amount of experience that radio, unless you do a couple of things that are really dumb, radio is safe as all hell. To be afraid of it is foolish. It's lethal. And as I to slightly exaggerate, to continue doing that literally is criminally negligent homicide. And it's just a matter of time before various communities are sued because their particular relatives died in that community from criminally negligent homicide because the community would not allow the safety antennas and the homeland security antennas that are being paid by a fund set aside by the Department of Homeland Security, because these communities would not allow those antennas to be installed in their community. It's time we stop making those foolish decisions. It's time we all try to educate these people who mean well, but I'm convinced they're dead wrong. That's an opinion. Anybody want to add or subtract to it? Give me a call, letters right now. K2IW and the TechNet.
I got one more question, guys.
Go ahead, Barry.
Okay, this is totally out of left field, but I was listening to the radio one day, and I cannot remember what the guy said, but maybe you know. If you have a remote control for your TV or, you know, any infrared remotes, they're all the same. What can you aim it at that will glow? I always thought it was one of these white LEDs, but no effect. I tried it. Like it didn't do it, and I would have thought that would work. There is something that we have in our house that you can aim it at, though, that will make, that will glow when you aim an infrared LED. I don't wonder if anybody knows what it is.
That's a Radio Shack product, Barry. If you go to Radio Shack, and I hope they still sell it, they sell you this little plastic card that's a couple of inches square, which contains a phosphorus light material. Charge the material by putting it near a bright light. You then bring it into a dark room. It doesn't glow. You aim your infrared remote control at it, and you see it flickering at the rate of modulation of your remote control. And by looking at the various flicker rates of the light that comes out of this thing, you can see the fact that your up channel, down channel, up sound, loud, softer sound, that they all have a different pattern. So that is a Radio Shack product, which I hope is still being sold. Thank you, Barry.
Your AM radio receiver will work just as well, KCJ.
much. I knew there was something that I had in my house. I tried this once and it worked, and I forgot what it was. The AM receiver. Who said that?
This is K2JJ. Works every time, Barry. Just tune off to the side. Find a clear spot, and you'll hear it.
He's absolutely right, and I think I did that demonstration a few weeks ago. Brought in one of my AM receivers, and we actually listened to my remote control from my Panasonic television. The good news about that technique is it's a hell of a lot more sensitive, but it's measuring the interrupted current that's being generated by the circuit and being sent to the LED. It doesn't confirm the LED, but since the LED is a very high reliability item, 99% of the time that's good enough. This Radio Shack product really does an end-to-end test. It confirms that the light-emitting diode really is emitting those pulses. But an AM radio does an excellent job. Back to you, Barry.
Need one a simple test to check them, Dick.
Okay. Repeat that, Mel. I didn't quite understand what you were saying.
Took an old VCR I found in the street, and I took out the infrared detector in there, the little square thing that's a half-inch square, which contains the transistor. It's got the photocell, you know, the whole business in there. It's got three terminals on it. You got a ground, you got a 9-volt, and you got another one that's where the pulse comes off of. You hook your scope across it, and you can look at the pulses, you know, and see each button, what it does, if it's erratic, you know, how well it works, you know. It's a quick little test. All you need is a 9-volt battery to add to it, Dick, over.
Fantastic. Hey, Barry, in your area, your residents are throwing out video cassette recorders once every week. All you've got to do is pick up one of those, and you got it made. N2 Moonbound, K2RIW on the TechNet.
Yeah, that is clever. That is clever, Bill. Okay, that's a good idea. So we're coming up with lots of ways. See, now, actually, I find that the LED is one of the more common failures in the remote control. I haven't been fixing any lately, but years ago when I was doing live TV work, I certainly did, I found that it was the LED itself that was failing in most cases, so... The Radio Shack tester is a good one, and the Bell tester is a good one. What you do is first you aim it at your radio, and if it's making noise, you know it's working up to the LED. Then, of course, if you don't get anything out of the LED with the other two tests, well, you know you got it. That's a good confirmation. I think you could probably put a meter across the LED and read the voltage, wouldn't you?
Yes, you could. But I see possibilities of a LED failure where approximately the right voltage appears, approximately the right current appears, but it's just not emitting that infrared signal. There's a slim possibility the LED could fail in that way. Back to you, Barry.
Okay. Carry on, guys. I think Mel's idea is a cheap one. You don't have to go out and buy anything. That's good. We all have a VCR laying around somewhere, so... I think in the end, that turns out to be the cheapest way. I think you could also do this by aiming it at these diodes. You can still get them, a germanium diode or something. You know, you put a meter across the diode and just aim the LED at it. Those things are somewhat light sensitive, you know.
Yes, they are. There are certain kinds of transistors where you peel off the cap of the transistor and aim the light at the junction of the transistor itself. And if the transistor is properly biased, it'll change significantly. Quite a few of the early photo detectors really were a photosensitive transistor. Okay, you guys have just listened to TechNet number 1121, the Mel, Barry, and Dick Show. Mel, Barry, Dick, Bob, Paul, Frank show tonight, and this was TechConnect number 1121, as I said. We think we'll be back next week with more of this jazz, and we'll settle more of these, what's the word for it now, intricacies of electronics. And boy, there's a lot of wireless electronics crawling into our houses these days. You just listen to any of the shows that describe the computer electronic show that's going on out west nowadays. All kinds of fancy gadgets are happening. It looks like everybody wants a portable digital assistant-like thing, which is a camera, a cell phone, a computer, a wireless internet, television set, everything in this little card-like thing that you stick in your pocket. You're going to be in perfect contact with the world. And remember, I used to predict 10 years ago that the day would come by way of satellites and cell phones and things like this, that you'd take a vacation, you'd be standing on a seashore in New Zealand, you'd take a picture with your camera of a beautiful sunset, you'd call up your friend in Los Angeles and say, I want to share this with you, and real time you send him the picture. We're essentially there. Or at least, maybe not internationally, but domestically, we're there right now. People are taking pictures and sending them by cell phone and other wireless LAN and local area networks and whatever, sending those pictures and data and whatever to whoever they want to. Boy, are we connected. 73, you all. Be kind to each other. Mel, you want to give them some closing words? K2KUY, KQRAW.
Give a couple closing words. This is K2KY. Thanks for all joining us. And yeah, we'll get to a little more nitty-gritties on takeoff angles and how to compute them and how they were derived next week. Just getting involved with a few subjects.